Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to End Credits here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm your host, Adam A. Donaldson, and joining me today is...
Peter Salmon.
Peter, who ventured out on a cold, blustery, snowy day.
Last night there was no snow. I wake up and just ice everywhere. I've already had one slip. I've had my first winter slip, and I think that's special. You know? Well, everybody gets one. It's just nice I got mine out of the way. And on December 1st.
You don't think it's because you're getting more clumsier as you get older?
Well, that probably too.
All right. Well, let's talk about the movies. End Credits is a local movie show for local movie fans. We are here every Wednesday at 2 p.m. to talk the latest in pop culture and review the newest movies, which this week will be the comedic whodunit Knives Out. That's in the back half of the show. And for the first half, we're going to look at some of the movie news from the past week, including Tom Hanks. Do we underestimate the talent of this man? It is Hanks, the Everyman version of Daniel Day-Lewis, with half the respect, and we'll explain that. And then were the 2010s the decade of the fan? That's one man's opinion, but what does that appraisal say about culture, and what does it say about us? And then finally, the future. Cineplex has announced a new initiative that might indicate what the future of the multiplex might look like, and are we looking forward to that? But first, speaking of movie theaters, this gets into the weeds a bit about the politics and stuff of how movies are played and how theaters exhibit movies, at least in the United States. So just to outline what we're going to talk about, there was this law passed in 1948 that said, they called it the Paramount Pictures consent decree, which I don't know how Paramount feels about that.
I don't know.
Still on them, you know, 40 years later, because there was a bunch of studios involved. But it was a law that was passed that said that movie studios can't own movie theaters.
Because, well, I think that was fair back then when the studios like MGM and such had, you know, full control. You know, like actors had to fight against them to get off, right? So yeah. I think back then they had more of a visible... huge force of power. So I could see the worry there for, you know, theaters and them dealing with that.
Mm-hmm. But the question is, should we worry now? Because now the Justice Department is saying that they are looking at repealing the Paramount Pictures consent decree and ending that. It was part of antitrust law that came out after the New Deal. As Peter was alluding to as well, you know, the studios used to own people.
Oh yeah.
Own actors' contracts. You couldn't go and do a movie at Warner Brothers if you're under contract at Paramount or Universal.
There's a reason some people did like 50 Westerns. It's not just because it's the only kind of acting they could do. It's the only time they were allowed to do.
But you know, this is an era where we're highly concerned about monopolization.
Yeah,
we're talking about Disney. Been talking about Disney all year. Disney, we're taking Disney. Over Fox, and talking about Netflix gobbling stuff up. We're talking about
what is Netflix gobbling up?
Well, there's a rumor going around that they might be buying Paramount. Actually,
really?
I mean, that's a rumor, but I mean,
well, they might have been the one to push towards this then.
Payback.
Well, I guess Netflix won't be dealing with theaters.
Well, actually, Netflix is looking at buying a theater in L.A. They're looking at buying the Old Egyptian in L.A., which is, I think it's a landmark.
The Egyptian, yeah. I think for Netflix, I would be okay with that, but it's the kind of thing where if they change it, you can't just pick which one, right?
Mm-hmm.
But Netflix does a lot of independent films, or at least, you know, still original fictional films. Mm-hmm. So I'd be okay with that. I think they'd do, like, that would have been great, The Irishman being shown in, you know, that theater. Mm. But again, I'm worried about Disney taking over theaters. In Canada especially, I would worry about Cineplex taking over, you know, the indie theaters in towns.
Yeah.
Like Cineplex maybe in Guelph taking over the Bookshelf.
I'm not sure there's a high chance of that, but I know where you're going, that, you know,
maybe funding a bit towards it so they have more choice of what they're showing.
Right. And, you know, there's a lot of, I mean, Cineplex, and we'll talk about Cineplex later, that it's hard to find a movie theater around that isn't a Cineplex. I think.
Silver cities are
Cineplex.
It's Cineplex. Okay. Yeah. I always thought it and the galaxies were separate, but no. Okay.
I mean, this all. I mean, that's how you get around it, right? No, this isn't a Cineplex. It's a Galaxy
Cinema. Well, then both could legally have Pizza Hut, and I'd be okay. I'd be okay with that. Cineplex.
But I mean, you know, if you go into Kitchener KW, there's like Landmark Cinema.
The Princess is Waterloo. Indie. Yeah, yeah.
The Princess is indie. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's tough to be an indie in this environment, and Disney's part of the problem because they mm-hmm. demand so much up front to exhibit their movies. They demand such a large cut, even into several weeks into screening them, because typically the way movies work is you make most of the money. The studio takes most of its share up front the first couple of weeks, because that's when most people go and see the movie now and then.
Yep.
As the longer it goes, the more the greater the cut the theater gets. But Disney's kind of squeezing that out too.
Well, and you just said Disney asked for the money to be able to have the theater show theirs. So they would be asking.
Well, that would be the concern. I mean, they already have, they have a lot of weight because they have 40% of the market.
Well, and just a ton of money.
That's what money buys you. It's a big stake of the market. But one of the things that they were talking about, concerning about, was, you know, bundling. And this is one of the things that the Paramount decree finished, is that, yeah, there were studios that had theaters,
mm-hmm.
but they also had these initiatives where they would bundle. So if you wanted a big movie, like, let's say, I'll use today examples, but let's say, you know, you have a big movie like Star Wars,
mm-hmm.
Disney could, again, theoretically, come out and say, okay, you can carry Star Wars, but if you want to carry Star Wars, you also have to carry Maleficent.
Kind of like Bell's Channel packages and yeah. stuff like that. Oh, okay, well, that's what I mean. And, you know, Bookshelf and other places, they, I don't know, maybe they wouldn't have enough money to pay Disney and such, right? But I guess maybe they still have the choice to not show Disney. But
well, I mean, the Bookshelf obviously does, but
yeah,
if you were to take like a large cinema chain like Cineplex, what happens if you can't afford to show Disney movies? But say that Disney owns a separate theater chain that sets up shop in Canada, or they buy several theaters, mm-hmm. and then Disney can say, okay, this is us. And again, it's not just so much that they're making money by through the vertical integration. They can say, like, okay, we're just going to show Disney movies, and like, okay, Irishman or Parasite or any of these smaller movies, we're not going to show that, because, you know, that's taking money out of our own pockets. We want to show our movies in our movie theaters and make our money, and it all goes to us. So that's...
There's going to be a lot of cinemas that aren't able to get it to that ratio, right? They're not going to be able to get what they want from Disney and then make that amount of money to be able to pay for what they're getting from Disney. And also for indie cinemas, they Disney owns Studio Ghibli, right? And there is a lot of indie cinemas that I think they do.
I think they have the rights to Studio.
The rights to it, yeah.
I don't think they own Studio Ghibli. I'm not sure that China would let that happen.
Okay, well, yeah, good for that. But again, Disney also censorship, so there might be a lot of, you know, kind of sprinkled censorship around. One thing I'm curious about, though, mm-hmm. would that allow smaller companies to contribute, like, say, in Guelph, starts with an L or whatever?
Landmark?
Yeah, Landmark or Cargill. I'd be interested.
I mean, it's hard enough for theaters to get started, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, there's a lot of research and, you know, and you see the theaters struggling too, trying to diversify. And again, we're going to talk about that in a bit. And I think the Landmark cinemas in Kitchener and Waterloo took over previous. Like, I can't remember who owned those before. The one at Sports World. And I think the other one's in Waterloo somewhere. But they used to be under a separate company.
Mm-hmm.
And Landmark just kind of comes in and took the space. I mean, again, it's the same thing in Toronto, where there was the AMC theater at Yonge Dundas. And now that's a Cineplex theater.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, man. I just want to say, I saw Jason Schwartzman there the one time. He was doing the Scott Pilgrim versus the World. I went to use the bathroom. It was just me and him and the whole Cineplex floor. It was a very beautiful moment. Just want to say, yeah.
would he phrase
Jason
it that
Schwartzman,
way?
No big deal. I'm besties, okay?
Would he remember this encounter?
No.
Actually, no. Now that you mention it, I walked past Michael Cera there.
That is amazing.
Around the same time period when he was shooting Scott Pilgrim.
Yep,
and I didn't I didn't recognize him at first. I mean, I thought, like, where do I know this kid from?
They always look different, and, yeah.
But he had the Scott Pilgrim haircut, so it was like it was a bit bizarre. So I'm like, where do I know this kid from? And then we were coming up. This is getting way off topic, but I was going down the escalator, and he was coming up the escalator. And I got to the bottom, and I realized, and I didn't remember his real name, but I remembered he was George Michael from Arrested Development.
Oh, way back then.
So I almost turned around and yelled George Michael, but he was gone at that point.
Yeah,
probably good for my esteem because. Anyway, you don't want to be in Young Dundas yelling after George Michael when that's not his name. Moving on. Speaking of comedic actors, SlashFilm.com posted an interesting article that posed an interesting comparison between Daniel Day-Lewis and Tom Hanks. Daniel Day-Lewis, of course, very well known as a method actor, making his own shoes for a role, very choosy.
Crippling his left foot.
Yeah.
I don't know if he actually did, but he did a good job of portraying that.
But, you know, he's well known for, like, ensconcing himself in the role. And then we have Tom Hanks, who does a lot of the same work, does a lot of, you know, is a really well-known actor, really accomplished actor. But does he get the respect that a Daniel Day-Lewis does because he's popular and also prolific? I mean, I would say I actually did the
prolific
count.
100%, yeah.
I did the count. Daniel Day-Lewis has done 6 movies so far this century versus 31 by Tom Hanks.
Yeah.
So 5 times as prolific.
Yeah, no, Daniel Day-Lewis is very picky choosy. Is he still retired?
I believe so.
Yeah, okay. But no, I think even though Tom Hanks does more, he can still be a character actor. He's just I was just probably better at picking because, like Daniel Day-Lewis, they've all pretty much been pretty critically acclaimed. I know there's been like a couple slumps, but other than that, and he's a character actor 100%. He's a similar character in each one, but with a lot of in-depth characteristics, and you know, he's very lovable and just great at
Tom
it.
Tom Hanks, you mean?
Yeah, Tom Hanks.
Tom Hanks also has that like goofy comedic history,
little element, yeah.
That, you know, bachelor party.
Or The Burbs. What is it?
The Burbs. Yeah, I
liked The Burbs when I was a kid.
Big, yeah. It, you know, it's...
But even those have a lot of, you know, in-depth character to him. Mm-hmm. Or at least, you know, him putting across those elements of, like the article said, a lovable dad. Yeah. And, you know, that's his character. And he's phenomenal at portraying that.
Yeah. It did strike me. And you don't want to talk about Tom Hanks and sex too much, but the one line is that they borrowed from Esquire, that it's, you know, he's just like your dad, you know, your dad's had sex without having to think about like the specific entrails.
Yeah, those are perfect perfect definition for him.
And you know, they I think it was in the article or maybe one of the comments, somebody mentioned like the scene in Charlie Wilson's War where, you know, there's a hot tub and he's in the hot tub with, you know, naked women and who are basically implied to be sex workers, and you know, the sex is kind of going on around him as he's watching Dan Rather in Afghanistan, and that's a very fascinating lens, and I'm very curious about, you know, the sort of asexualization of like American cinema. Like, that sounds weird to say out loud, but you know, it strikes me too that and I read an article a couple of years ago, somebody like mentioning that one of the differences between like the Marvel and DC universe, like two other brand names, is that the Marvel movies are fairly asexual themselves. Yes, there's like romantic pieces, parts of it too.
Oh, they're asexual, 100%.
But you know, the DC universe, it's very heavily implied that, Wonder Woman had sex. There's like a kind of, not explicit, but you know, it's very heavily implied that Superman and Lois Lane were having bathtub sex in Batman v Superman.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
So it's, There's something to this idea that, you know, the popularity that, you know, when you're on a Tom Hanks level or a Marvel Cinematic Universe level, sex is always in the background.
Yeah.
It's not something your hero deals with.
I do think Tom Hanks maybe, as opposed to Daniel Day-Lewis, maybe too much in like the past little bit, or maybe his picking has gotten a little sloppier. At least, I don't want to say sloppier, but kind of what happens to a lot of musicians, like it's still good, but it's the same, you know, like he's still doing a lot of the biopics with Spielberg and stuff. And like The Post was great, and, you know, and The Bridge of Spies was great, but you know, a little boring at some points, and very similar to what he's done and what's already been done.
I think Bridge of Spies is underrated.
Do you? Oh, okay, it won a.
But
it
didn't win a huge Oscar. Your criticism's not misplaced, though. And I would point to Philadelphia.
Oh,
his first Oscar.
Yes.
Where he plays Andrew Beckett, a lawyer who contracts HIV/AIDS. And has to sue for, you know, compensation after being fired for, mm-hmm. you know, being gay. And this is sort of where, I can also make the point, this is like his asexual work. But
yeah,
it was also,
well, there wasn't even really any in-depth,
right.
Like I don't think there was a single actual sex scene. Maybe an implied one.
No, but I mean, it was also 1993. And, mm-hmm. you know, even in 2019, male homosexuality is still not sort of...
It's not really in cinema, at least not in the blockbusters.
It's still kind of taboo as opposed to female mm-hmm. homosexuality.
It's going to happen in some Marvels, but the ones they picked for streaming platforms, right? Not the big screen. So even that's a little interesting, but...
It's telling that, like, the first mm-hmm. sort of openly gay person in a Marvel movie is, like, a throwaway role that's played by the director and
I think
Endgame.
But
the point I was trying to get at is that, you know, that's where kind of Tom Hanks's, like, dad factor kind of allowed a statement to be made.
Mm-hmm.
You could...
Well, it allowed it to be a wide statement,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, in times where, like, people feel, like, icky about the whole topic of homosexuality and with AIDS and everything, you see Tom Hanks and it's less icky, mm-hmm. quote unquote.
Because they represented him as just like a real dude.
Right.
Know, they didn't focus on this real guy being gay. They just focused on this real guy, you know, him losing his job and the AIDS and just, yeah. But they represented dealing with AIDS as the same as, you know, someone dealing with cancer or just any really bad.
Yeah.
Also, I want to say for Philadelphia, the makeup design was phenomenal. It was one of the first big screen portrayals of what AIDS looks like, you know?
Yeah. But, I mean, could you sell that without having Everyman Tom Hanks there?
I don't know.
It's trickier, but, I mean, that's where sort of, like, the power of Tom Hanks can be, like, used as a force of good and not just a force of, like, being the America's
the
dad
films.
Role. Yeah, it's, you know, it's like in Roots when the miniseries Roots where they had a lot of, like, the famous sitcom dads, like Ed Asner and Lorne Greene, like playing, you know, the slave owners, and it's, you know, it's a little teaspoon of sugar that
he's
lets
also,
you sell the point.
Also, Kenda Dan Day Lewis, he's done, you know, the epics, right? Like,
sure,
Green Mile is like 3 hours, you know, so he's accomplished that sort of thing.
Yeah, it's an interesting conversation to have that, you know, why
you just don't usually think of a character actor as someone a little PC, you know.
Or like popular, like character, like
yeah,
it's like
yeah.
the Ed Norton
like
and Birdman thing.
Yeah.
It's like I'm so tortured, I can only do theater. Like it's you know, you can't be popular. I'll digress. We're gonna take a quick break and then come back with some more news. You're listening to End Credits here on CFRU.
I can picture every move that a man could make. Getting lost in a loving is your first mistake. Sundown, you better take care. If I find you.
And that's always the saddest, you know. That's why the Beatles did in a weird way, a good thing, you know.
Yeah, 10 years and they're out.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was a little Sundown. A cover of the classic Lightfoot song. And we were just talking about being sad and still touring at 103 years old like Gordon Lightfoot. I'm kidding.
Canadian hero. Does he have the OC, Order of Canada? You should get that.
He probably
get
does.
On that Canada
Should
government.
Should we look it up?
Yeah.
Anyway, we'll start talking about the decade of the fan. Drew McWeeny, who I have followed for years since he was Moriarty at Ain't It Cool News, wrote an article for Film School Rejects called The Decade of the Fan. It's one of these look backs at the decade, kind of like what we did, but...
Yeah.
but little plug for us. Well, I'll let the fans decide. But in The Decade of the Fan, he talks about how... the 2010s are going to be known for how basically the nerds won, and we still weren't satisfied.
I guess, you know what? It's okay to say nerd. It's become, yeah, a culture now.
Yeah.
I think that's the case. Yeah, 100%. The one thing about it, though, is we don't know. That maybe could have happened before. There just wasn't as much. There wasn't Twitter. There wasn't Facebook. There wasn't all this social media, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the two kind of came up together, because I think social media was sort of rationalized around that point at the start of the decade. Twitter, you know, started. Facebook went, not public in terms of like the IP sense, but in public in terms of you didn't have to be. It used to be like you had to be tied to a university campus. You had to have a university account to go on Facebook, and then they spread it to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, that point was, like, around 2009, 2010.
90s and 2000s, though, there were a lot of forums and things like that.
Oh,
and,
absolutely.
You know, big companies did have people still look through those and know, like, what the actual moviegoers want. But
and what I found interesting was, like,
to a bigger degree,
Drew McWeeny took some share of credit for that. That, you know, when he started at AICN, it was very much about, like, we're dicks. It's yeah. like... Everyone who's covering movies is a studio flack. They're doing the studio's work. We're coming in. We're dicks. We're going to root through your garbage. We're going to get your scripts. We're going to spoil them online. And, like, Drew McWeeny was, like, on J.J. Abrams' bad list for years, because someone gave Drew, when he was Moriarty at Ain't It Cool, they gave him a copy of J.J. Abrams' Superman script, which had immediately, like, visceral fan reaction, because it was like, it turned out Lex Luthor was Kryptonian and like Krypton didn't explode, and so this whole kind of like Lord of the Ringsification of the Superman mythos that a lot of fans had a very bad reaction to. And so it's interesting, in this piece he's like, yeah, I kind of cost this.
That partly, yeah, you definitely give a little, you know, push.
Yeah,
a little push.
He gave it up. Yeah, like him and the whole Ain't It Cool news, which of course, you know, given the accusation against, you know, Harry Knowles and, you know, does anyone go to Ain't It Cool News anymore? I think it's still there, I don't think anyone...
If anybody, like a small, maybe indie, yeah, although indie film, we're, you know, and we don't, so I don't know if really anybody does.
Right.
Maybe friends, pals.
Yeah.
So. But no, I think the fan base is, yeah, it definitely took control. I think part of the issue was... Disney and other companies having enough power to take more full control of the blockbusters.
Mm.
And then that, in correlation with the rise of fans liking that, it just became all the theaters needed, you know? There's sometimes
right.
there's three comic book movies, you know, in the theaters at once.
Yeah.
And that, you know, slips out a couple of maybe more indie ones, you know, that could have gone in there. Obviously, in the big screen, I don't mean like indie, but I mean, you know, maybe one that was just 60 million as opposed to, you know, 200 million or something.
Right. And that's what, like, one of the things he's getting at. It's like everything has to be a rave. It has to be like the biggest, the best reviews, biggest box office opening. And it's crazy to put those like kind of expectations on every single release.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, nobody sets out to make a bad movie.
No.
Bad movies kind of happen.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of an example of a purposeful one, but only in a comedically done way.
Yeah, know? I mean, you know, something like the Human Centipede movies, like maybe, like there's no way those are going to...
Yeah.
You're not going to win Oscars making Human Centipede movies,
mm-hmm.
but for the most part, nobody kind of sets out to make, you know, a bad movie. But so these things happen incidentally. And then to get to your point, too, was that people focus on what it means to the culture in like very specific ways. And then going back to the Disney merger with Fox, people were like, yes, we're finally going to get Avengers versus X-Men. It's like, okay, that's fine. That's nice.
It's filling up more slots in the box office.
Well, this is it. But you're not going to get any more movies like Widows.
Yeah.
Or what was that one, Brad Pitt, Ad Astra?
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, there's no room for like those kind of like bold attempts.
Well, in a couple of years, maybe not even Ford versus Ferrari that's in right now.
Well, this
you know?
Is it. I mean, and yeah. that's why there was so much on Ford versus Ferrari.
I'm very surprised Queen versus Slim was able to make it in. Although we're at a very, very dull Disney time right now. So
right. I mean, we're between Frozen and Star Wars, mm-hmm. so there's not. It's kind of a holding pattern.
I'm okay with the kids' films, though. Kids love them. So I don't want to bash them. But,
no.
Even that, too, is, it's an issue.
I mean, if you're going to bash, like, Frozen 2, you're going to have to go back and bash, like, the home video release of, like, Lion mm-hmm. King 1.5.
Mm-hmm.
What happened between? Like, what happened between the montages? That's kind of always been Disney's jam. But, I mean, like, the bigger picture stuff, like, and we talked about this on another show. You were not. I think it was Candace that was on that week. But we talked about Disney throwing Fox stuff in the quote unquote vault so that mm-hmm. rep theaters can't have access to it. I mean, the implications of that were completely secondary, like distant secondary
mm-hmm.
to like getting Avengers versus X-Men and having Wolverine in the MCU and doing Wolverine versus Hulk. And
that'd be kind of fun.
And yeah, well, it would be fun, but you know, what does that cost in the
Not
long run?
Not worth the cost at all.
Yeah.
And you could view this as a good way. Or in a bad way, this did help sprout more independent films and such on Netflix and mm-hmm. other streaming platforms. But even though that's fun to have them, I still think it's bad that those had to leave the big screen, you know?
Yeah.
Irishman would have gotten a super wide release, you know, back in the day. Although I think Martin Scorsese actually for that one could have been able to do that, but decided against it.
Well, nobody wanted to do it because it was mm-hmm. like so like prohibitively expensive. It's like, well,
exactly, extra expensive.
What is this for?
Mm-hmm.
Like, who is this for? Who wants to see like Robert De Niro through the ages?
Mm-hmm. And then even Disney, the big ones are starting to do the streaming, right? So even that is becoming less and less of a positive you can try to find.
Right, and it's to get back to the main point that, you know, the toxic element of fandom, too.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw this a lot on the message boards about Knives Out. And it's like, oh, I hated Last Jedi, but I like this. Like, why do you have to bring that up all the time?
Yeah, every single darn it's time, like, yeah.
It's not enough that you don't like Last Jedi. That's perfectly legit mm-hmm. if you don't like Last Jedi. But, you know, people, and we've talked about this before, like the starting of petitions. Like, we have to, like, remake the last season of Game of Thrones.
Fans have and we almost have taken over the control of it as well. Yeah, like
right.
The Sonic the Hedgehog thing. Like I do prefer the changes, but you know that that was strange. That was. I don't know. The fans had a lot of control there. You know,
and it costs too.
Yeah,
for the studio to go back, like to push the release date back, I think 5 months, and then to have like redo all that CGI. That's mm-hmm. not an insignificant cost.
Mm-hmm. It's not always the fans helping. Sometimes fans will bash or try to destruct another film not associated with what they're a fan of.
That's a good point too, because mm-hmm. from what I understand, that
13 Reasons Why, the first season, that thing getting cut out just because
right.
people opposed to it, that like, you know, use Netflix and love Netflix but did not approve of that, and Netflix cut it out, you know.
There was something,
this is fan wars,
something was used in that Sandra Bullock movie, that Bird Box.
Bird Box.
There was a
yeah.
clip used of some kind of attack that people took like exception to, and they had to like cut it out. And it's just like,
it probably would have worked so well, you know?
Yeah, it was like stock footage, or it was like file footage of some sort of attack. I can't remember the exact circumstances at the moment, but yeah, there was just like, no, you've got to take this out. You've got to take this out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all there is to it. And what this kind of push does, this kind of reaction does, is it makes it so much harder for art to take chances.
Mm-hmm.
I think the wonder of something like Joker is that people were actually pretty open to somebody doing something different with such an iconic character.
Yeah.
I didn't particularly care for it, but a lot of people did, and a lot of people were pretty open to the possibility. But when it comes to like something like The Last Jedi, or even Ghostbusters, like May having the all-female Ghostbusters, to have like little minute changes,
mm-hmm.
like to just say, we're going to try an all-female Ghostbusters, or we're going to, you know, do a very like focused kind of Star Wars story, people rebel.
Yeah,
that just makes it harder for the next filmmaker who gets their hands on something like a franchise like that to take chances.
Well,
and then it makes it stagnant too.
And because the fans, the fans that have the majority that we're talking about, it's not Canadian cinema. So, you know, we're getting less Canadian films in theaters as well. You know, we used to get every once in a while, you know, one indie one able to make it into a Cineplex Canadian company. But that sort of thing really doesn't happen. You know, the Guelph guy, Tommy Gofton, I remember one of his works, the comedic one, got a Cineplex screening in here in Kitchener. And that's the kind of thing that just I don't think would happen anymore because of this, you know.
Although, I mean, like Black Fawn is, the Guelph company is pretty, enjoying some pretty good success with its distribution.
And are they getting the Cineplex and such?
Well, they're getting like festival coverage. I don't think they're getting wide release, but
yeah, okay.
The point's taken.
Yeah, yeah.
Speaking of Cineplex, they are building, I guess it seems like kind of like a pilot project. It's called The Junction. It'll be at the Erin Mills Town Center sometime next year. And it's six movie screens, but it will also have like an arcade where you can access new and classic video games. It will have a VR studio. It will have a food hall, like a cafeteria, with an indoor food truck. You also will be able to buy beer and wine there. And it will have venues for live performances, outdoor screenings. It's the cinema of the future is what Cineplex is calling it.
I think that sounds amazing. I know this is kind of contradictory to all the conglomerate disses I was given, but Cineplex is Canadian, and that would be so much fun. And I didn't know until this, but they own Playdium too, and it would just be them kind of morphing with Playdium.
Yeah, basically.
I one thing I am against, I don't like it in the galaxies either. Alcohol is becoming too large of a component towards it, and that really makes people talk louder and everything in theaters, and just
maybe depends on what time you go. Like maybe in the middle of the afternoon, you're not going to get a lot of drinkers at the movie theater.
And it's also like a place that first things first, at least what this is going to be, like, you know, mixed with Playdium. It's like kids first, and I just, you know, I don't know, but I can't even take one brewski, so that's, you know, maybe it's just me. But
you're a lightweight.
But
I shouldn't laugh. I kind of am too, but that's fine.
Yeah, I think it's cool. Did it mention go kart? Is it going to have like the kind of go kart?
No, I don't think there's anything about go kart. Okay, but I mean, there could be room for expansion.
Yeah, it'll have the fun video games at Playdium, and you can go see a film and do it all. And even though there's, you know, electronic and videos and games and stuff, it's out of the house, you know. And it's there is different locations than one locations. There's going to be some, you know, walking around, and there's the restaurant you can eat with your family and everything. And though it's going to be a bigger conglomerate, or, you know, more power,
it's going to be a bigger thing for sure. But I mean,
maybe more
the Cineplexes are all like kind of already halfway there, because I went to see Knives Out on Saturday afternoon, and I mean there were two different parties going on.
Yeah.
So.
Oh yeah, I think we went to the same one then. Yeah, there was. I went to the Kelsey's after this because there was a bunch of huge like sports, like hockey games and things going on as well.
Mm.
Some Americans were in the Kelsey's.
Heaven for fun.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I mean, they are kind of halfway there.
Those kids were running around, right?
There's an arcade there.
They'd love to be doing the VR.
Yeah.
But it's not like Silver Creek where the Cineplex or the Galaxy ones don't have like sit downs, such as the Pizza Hut.
No. Yeah.
But, you know, we'll have Galaxy and that all together.
You can get like the hot foods there.
But you can't really sit down. Like there's no areas, but nobody actually sits down there.
Right.
Yeah, unless you're waiting for your friend to come or something.
Right. No, that's legit.
And they had, you know, the fun little room to play with their toys, but there's no virtual reality in those fun rooms, right?
Right.
I've never done VR, by the way. Have you? Is it fun? Can we do it with glasses?
I've done Google Glass before.
Yeah, and can you do it like while still wearing the glasses?
Yeah, they fit over. Cool. I mean, what the Google Glass is just basically you put your phone in like this cardboard thing.
And you wear it.
I mean, that's like lo-fi VR. But yeah, I think you're good to use. I think you can use the Oculus with glasses for sure.
I think this will just be a more classy Chuck E. Cheese.
That's probably a safe comparison.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably a good comparison. Like, maybe not with so much with, like, anthropomorphized animals running around.
but, you know.
Don't need that trauma, but.
Same kind of layout.
Yeah.
Just bigger.
I mean, and we've got to expect this, too, that, you know, it's, aside from the art houses, it's not enough to just show movies anymore.
No, it really isn't, especially with all the streaming, which I said is, again, viewing films, but in your house.
Yeah.
At least that's out and about.
But I will say that, you know, going to the opening night of The Irishman at the Bookshelf, that was a packed house, given that the movie was going to be available on Netflix in like five days. So, you know, you still build it. People will come. Maybe not enough for like five showings a day.
Mm-hmm.
But people will show up for a 3.5 hour movie about a mobster.
Yeah.
So you have to know your audience, I guess. And if your goal is to like just make a ton of money and make a profit,
mm-hmm.
this is probably the route you got to go. But if you're like the art house and you're content with, you know, getting by and like maybe if a half filled house for like one or two shows a night,
mm-hmm.
you can still get by. And it's a matter of like separation of powers, I guess.
This might even though, because of the alcohol, be enjoyable, like an enjoyable late at night thing for adults, you know?
Sure.
I think my mom would be, when she goes to see the operas, would be very okay with like a sip of wine while watching it or something like that. You know?
Yeah.
But mainly for me, I think it'll be positive for kids.
Yeah.
You didn't really say are you for it or are you vehemently against it?
I won't go to it, but
no,
I'm fine with like giving it a whirl.
Yeah. No, if I in the future, okay, if it's
a success, great. I'm not going to go to it. I mean, I don't have kids, so mm-hmm. you know, I'm kind of curmudgeon-y like that. I just go to watch the movie.
Yep.
So it's, you know, it's not for me, but you know, it could be for someone, and that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
I'm okay with it.
And they said I think they're going to start it around 2021.
Yeah, they're aiming to get late 2020 is when this one's going to be going at the Aaron Mills Town Center. So we'll see. Maybe we'll check it out. But for now, we're going to check out Knives Out,
mm-hmm.
and we'll be right back with that review. You're listening to End Credits here on CFRU 93.3 FM. CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
If you're in exile with me, this is a place you can do. There's a lot of that going around. You know, it's better people are decent, friendly and kind. That's a radical notion in these kinds of buying times. At the Grand Hotel Cosmopolis, nationalists wish that we didn't. At the Grand Hotel Cosmopolis, gonna have a party tonight, gonna dance the Jewish blues tonight. Alright.
Thank you all for getting together like this. It isn't legally necessary, but I thought because you're all in town and some of you are leaving soon.
Excuse me. I'm sorry. Ladies and gentlemen, I would like to gently request that you all stay in town until the investigation is completed.
Yeah, well, he's gently requesting, but I'm going to have to make that an order. No one move until we figure this all out.
What? Can we ask why? Has something changed?
No.
No, it hasn't changed, or no, we can't ask?
Mr. Stevens, you may continue.
And that was a clip from Knives Out. It is the new film from Rian Johnson. And it stars Daniel Craig, Chris Evans, Ana de Armas, Jamie Lee Curtis, Michael Shannon, Don Johnson, Toni Collette, Lakeith Stanfield, and Christopher Plummer. Quite a murderer's row. 27 Yankees of cast you can put together in the year 2019.
Yeah, it was impressive.
Yeah. So Rian Johnson is most famously known probably as the director of The Last Jedi, the last Star Wars film. He is slightly less well-known for some of his other film works.
Looper,
Brick, ugh. The Brother. You don't like Looper?
Did you like Looper? I thought the ending was good. Very disappointing. It was akin to Magnolia, my comments. It was very great, but the ending just kind of, yeah.
I mean, sometimes it's tough to end those things, but I didn't have a problem with the ending. But Brick and Brothers Bloom are pretty much close to perfect. He also directed a lot of key episodes of Breaking Bad.
Yes. What is it called? The Fly. The bottle episode.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know I overly gush about those things, but it's that's one of the best episodes and phenomenal. Yeah. And he did the Ozymandias one.
This is the second to last Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, this is a guy who has a lot of talent. I loved The Last Jedi. I thought it was really great.
I was pretty indifferent. I don't know. I thought it was very well done. I'm not a huge Mark like Hamill guy. I would have been okay if he just focused on his aside from that.
You know what? My sister's not a big Mark Hamill person either.
Even in the first ones, he's not even really. He's like
so weird.
He's just kind of what's needed to build the plot around. I've never really found he has much in-depth emotions and such.
Interesting. We should We should get the two of you together and do like kind of like a special episode, like a Mark Hamill intervention.
Yeah, but no, overall, it was still, a good film.
But I mean, this is kind of closer to his speed. And, and like those first two movies, Brick and Brothers Bloom, they're genre movies. They're kind of like these mystery sort of crime movies. Kind
yeah,
of
like pulpy. You said, who done it?
Yeah, and he really understands the format. He understands the genre. He understands the tropes, and he's able to repackage them in a way that you get something really, really unexpected.
Yeah, he's probably read a lot of whodunit works.
I think so.
And yeah, he's like 30 Agatha Christies or something like that.
At least,
or maybe even gone to the the walk-in ones you can do yourself. A little murder mysteries; those are really common.
Oh, he's done Dinner Theater.
No, I know, but that'd be cool if he did. And that wouldn't surprise me because this was like spot on to all the ones that have been done before.
Yeah.
They're everywhere, but this is still. You didn't really say it. Did you like it?
I liked it a lot.
I loved it. I thought this was just, phenomenal. And a play on whodunits, but original enough, lovable characters, that it wasn't boring. And there was not too much, but enough of a play on whodunits that, again, it was like, oh, okay, they know what's going on here,
Right.
But not to the extent where it's like, okay, we get it. You're parodying that, Well, not parodying it. Sorry, you're, alluding to those whodunits.
Right.
It's not parody. It is just a straight up.
No, it's very straightforward, very matter of fact. Mm-hmm. It is a heightened reality because I'm not sure whatever voice accent Daniel Craig is doing is not legit. It's not an accent you find out in nature.
No, but he's supposed to be the detective's always over the top, so
right.
He's just got the most stereotypical Southern accent,
and it plays this very interesting thing with the Daniel Craig. What's his character's name? Benoit Blanc.
Mm-hmm. Detective Benoit Blanc.
Detective Benoit Blanc. You might have read a Twitter about a New York article about him. To quote one character from the film, the movie. The movie does this thing where it's like he's supposed to be the genius detective. He's supposed to be the Poirot or the Miss Marple or whatever. And it's like you spend most of the film like wondering, is he though?
Yeah. Is he just like lying about this being what he's pursuing? Does he have something else in the back?
I don't know if he's lying or anything, but it's just like you're supposed to believe this is the character who is like here to make sense of all this.
Mm-hmm.
And he seems as much.
He's doing it in a very abstract way, too.
Yeah, he seems to be as much as like the pinball in the machine as everyone else. Mm-hmm. And the main character.
Marta.
Marta, played by Ana de Armas, who's the nurse of the Christopher Plummer character, who's the character whose death is what is,
It centers around.
The plot centers around. And the movie does this very clever thing where it kind of explains the how.
Yeah.
And it shows you the how. And then the rest of the film is about...
Who?
Well, it's not just about who, but it's about, like, how much of what you saw is what happened.
Yeah. You viewed... how it was done,
yeah.
But maybe there's a lot of aspects of how it was done you weren't able to view,
right?
And
it falls on this poor woman Marta, who was his nurse and has a certain share of responsibility for the plot.
Yep.
And how she handles
I'd say
it.
She's the main character.
She is the main character.
Yeah, she is. That's the one thing. The trailers did not put her in it enough. I don't think they didn't really represent enough that she was the main character.
Well,
they were mostly standalones of the one scene without her too.
I mean, Ana de Armas is not as big a star as Daniel Craig Chris Evans.
James Bond and Captain America.
So it's tougher to stand out. But I mean, it's very telling of both the role that she plays. Mm-hmm. The nurse. She's not a member of the family. She's quote unquote the help.
Well, they say she's a member of the family till you know.
But
what?
I mean, that's really genius too. Is the way that
you see what those Richies are really like. That shows even Jamie Lee Curtis. She gets. An okay amount of screen time, but even not as the main characters, they're in depth enough that it's like, oh, they're lying, but they got some lovable tendencies, they got some hateable ones. They're just great, greatly written characters.
They're not,
and different sprinkles of aspects in each one, but not in your face.
They're not necessarily bad.
Yeah,
and
that's what I meant. I mean, they have bad tendencies in them, and they lie about certain things.
They could be jerks.
Yeah, we saw a good contrast of their goods and their bads, and even if it was through. you know, our guesses through their lies. You know, was that a lie they said, you know?
But it's so great when, because there's that scene early on where she comes to the mansion after the funeral. And it's the,
you know, talking Jamie Lee Curtis or
I meant the
Martha, yeah.
Anna de Armas, and Jamie Lee Curtis, you know, hugs her and says, "I wanted you at the funeral, but I was outvoted." And yes. Then later, Michael Shannon's character says the exact same thing.
I love that. That was, I gave that a laugh for sure.
And it's, you know, it creates a definite, it gives you an idea of exactly who these people are.
Yeah, and little background thing sprinkled throughout. Like, he's not really needed, but the Michael Shannon's son, you know, the alt-right little trolling dude.
Yeah,
he's the guy with the lisp, I think. Yeah,
that's where the movie kind of stumbles for me.
Oh, really? You weren't.
It's very, like, kind of explicitly political, like, when they're having that discussion about, like, it was the immigrants and things.
A couple seconds, though.
Where, you know, the Don Johnson character is, like, let's get all the immigrants rounded up, and
He was great in this.
Don Johnson was great. He's having a great year.
He's just having a great comeback.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think probably partly through, was it Django Unchained or the other, it was one of the most recent Quentin Tarantino's Western ones that really helped.
Yeah, he was in Once Upon a Time.
But yeah, my mom didn't expect him in it. But then, yeah, when she saw him, she was very okay. I think her enjoyment of the film raised quite a bit.
The real question we have to ask ourselves now.
Also, I want to say, Don Johnson's the main character in Watchmen, right? Right now?
Yeah.
It revolves, the whole show this season revolves around his death and whodunit. So I know that they were filmed at the same time, so it wasn't an on purpose thing, but it's just, I found that very interesting.
I was going to say, the real question now is, where is Philip Michael Thomas?
I also want to say one thing.
And see, perfect. I mentioned Philip Michael Thomas, and we have to move on. The other guy in Miami Vice.
Oh, well, see, I haven't seen Miami Vice. No, was he in the film or what?
No, he wasn't, but I mean, where is he? Don Johnson's having a comeback. Where's Philip Michael Thomas?
Well, and where's Brendan Fraser, right?
Well, like Brendan Fraser.
What's Brendan Fraser been doing in the past?
I can't remember what he was in a movie, but he's also one of the characters in Doom Patrol.
Yeah, but what's Doom Patrol? I know what Doom Patrol is, but does anybody really know what Doom Patrol? Like, do you watch Doom Patrol?
I've seen the commercials.
Yeah, exactly.
Look, there's too many comic book movies on TV. I'm trying to catch up on Arrowverse right now. Okay, moving on. But the thing about that, the little political thing with them confronting Marta or trying to get Marta to talk about, like, the good immigrants and the bad immigrants. It reminded me of Last Christmas, where there's, like, little Brexit things in Last Christmas that kind of, like, come out of nowhere. And it's like, I understand that Brexit is a thing in England right now. Okay. I don't need it here. It's fine. And this was, I think this was, it's kind of firmly set up that these people are kind of, like, smiley, happy, you know, yeah, Marta, you're one of the family.
Yeah, but hidden and, like, Richie Rich, you know, stereotypes.
I don't need the Trump virtue signaling kind of thing.
So you were against that being in the film? I think it was just, again, little sprinkles to show what they're like on the inside, you know, even though they claim to be nice, there's some, you know, elements of being raised rich that sprinkled onto them to make them a little, you know, pretentious.
I get that.
But a bit too kind of in your face, like too abrupt, instead of kind of just a slow burn to showing that Don Johnson was conservative.
I don't need to, like, hear. I don't need people to say the words Trump. I don't need to hear it was people maybe, talk yeah, about
too
red
many
cap
firm and, examples to stuff actually like, going on right now.
You can be a dick without being Trump aligned, like without having to bring Trump in it. It's fine. You know, I get that. You know, somebody can be a conservative jerk, and you know, there were conservative jerks before Trump. There'll be conservative jerks after Trump. It's a little, like, sort of thing that makes us very on the nose and makes, like really sticks a pin in, like, this was a movie made in 2019, and that's fine but it doesn't need it.
They already showed enough of, like, even though they claim it, she's not actually, Marta's not actually the family. So yeah, I see what you
right.
mean there.
It puts a pin in like when this movie was made, and I don't think it needed it. I think it was kind of over the top, but I don't want to focus on that, because that's like a minor
yeah,
quibble.
That was like just a few seconds, but no, I know what you mean. It did stand out as a negative. What's another? The sound engineering. Maybe not overall, but the little piano.
Yeah,
That was, and the cane later on, Michael Shannon's cane. There was some really good timing and sound engineering done to get your feelings of this whodunit going.
Right. That's the scene where the Michael Shannon character is confronting Marta, and he's walking with the cane, and you hear the cane bang, bang on the floor. And it's so off-putting.
Mm-hmm. No, it brings about the same feelings of Marta. Her full change of this guy was a brother. Now he's this scary dude, and it's just been a day, you know?
It was really effective. The music was really great, too.
The music was outstanding.
Like, it had this kind of like 60s.
Well, the Gordon Lightfoot in the background, yeah. That one little bar.
Yeah.
And the last credit song's Rolling Stones was a perfect fit for the finale.
Yeah. That's why the Trump kind of stuff is kind of incongruous, and like people calling the granddaughter like an SJW.
You didn't like that?
Well, again, it puts like the pin like about the 2019 thing, and the vibe that Rian Johnson is setting is like, even though people are using like cell phones and computers in it, the vibe is like very like, this is like very 60s inspired.
They also, for her though, for Catherine Langford, I enjoy that, and I enjoyed their mention of what the paper is she's working on right now, because I am in fourth year BA, and she was such a real representation of a lot of people like that, including the SJW. So I was actually a fan of
that,
including a lot of them who, even though are, you know, like Lena Dunham too, even though, you know, very much so to the left with these claims, rich, so every once in a while you'll see, oh, okay, no, they got some, you know, maybe fiscal conservative ideas and such. Yeah, we saw the real her too, even though she claims to be this, you know, kind of liberal bohemian BA student.
Right. I mean, it's sort of easier to be that when you have the comfort of of family money, and I think that was well told.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked Ana de Armas, because I feel like she has not gotten her, like, she's done a lot of stuff, but there's a real sweetness to her that I've always, like,
very lovable,
sort of, you know, in her performances, but she's like always kind of cast as the bombshell and the sex bomb.
Is she?
Like Blade Runner 2049.
Oh, see, yeah, I haven't seen that.
Knock Knock, the Eli Roth movie. And,
yeah.
And of course, she's very attractive, but I think this sort of really suits her. Like, there's something going on in her that is like very sweet,
very human, very subtle. I never once looked at her and would have thought that she was. But I mean,
that's kind of what she's been cast in before. It's like this love interest.
I was thinking more of like her work. You know, I viewed her more as even though I didn't like it. You know, the actress like in Roma. You know, she should do that kind of thing. You know, art films. Like, no, she was.
Yeah, there's something. Yeah, and it's, so this is like a really great discovery of her and of her potential. Of course, her next big thing is she's a Bond girl. She's in the next Bond movie.
Wow, but the next James Bond's also going to be female, so I think maybe they're going to be working a bit, you know, forward. They're going to be going forward when it comes to their female roles.
You think it's going to be a female James Bond next?
Didn't they already kind of confirm it? Or?
Well, I think...
I guess they've said, like, even with Idris Elba, they said confirmed, and that was, like, 5 years ago, not the case.
Well, I think there's another 007 in it, because it starts off with James Bond retired, but the current 007 in the movie is introduced as a woman. She's not Jane Bond, but she's 007.
Maybe she won't take over then. I'm not sure.
But, I mean, it'll be interesting to see what happens to her next. But otherwise, like, Knives Out, a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Well worth.
Well, we didn't mention him, but Christopher Plummer was outstanding.
He's always great.
Yeah, he's always great. I want people to know, you can't really see it in the trailers, he's in it a lot.
Yeah.
There is as many flashbacks of him as there. There's actually probably more screen time of him than there is with Chris Evans.
Chris Evans doesn't show up till like about halfway through the movie.
But then he's pretty centric. He's pretty centric.
But I mean, it's interesting.
One thing I also wanted to say, Jamie Lee Curtis had a little kind of sub storyline going on. And it was so good. It really was. That's what I mean. Like, even the main characters have enough depth and small little stuff going on in this whodunit that it's really great. Yeah.
Well, that'll have to be the last word, except Gordon Lightfoot is indeed a recipient of the Order of Canada.
Okay, good on him. Good on you, man. I love you.
I hope he's listening.
Yeah.
That is it for this week's show. We hope you liked it. If you want to listen to it again, find us on our website, endcreditsradioshow.com. You can also download the show on the Guelph Politicast channel every Friday at Podbean, or you can get it through your favorite podcast app at Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. And if you want to find us on social media, we're on Facebook at End Credits Radio Show and on Twitter at End Credits Radio. And Peter, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me as Mr. Tarak on YouTube and Twitter. And you can check out our newest video, The Red Beans, by OCAD student Eric Daniels. He's a artist, and he's a very good one. Check it out.
Didn't think he was a chemist coming out of OCAD, but good.
Hey, you never know. You never know.
Do they have good chemistry program in OCAD?
I think there's probably a lot of people who go very in-depth to the usage of paint oils and stuff, and I think that has a lot of connections to chemistry, sir.
I went further than I thought, but okay. I'll be back here tomorrow on CFRU for Thursday at 5 p.m. News and Politics. That's Open Source as well with my partner in crime there, Scotty Hertz. Find me on Twitter and Instagram in the meantime at Adam A. Donaldson. Or go to my political site, GuelphPolitico.ca, and stay tuned for more great programming here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. And we'll see you next Wednesday at 2 p.m. for more end credits, and we'll see you then.